Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to work session for City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, February 5th, 2013. I currently have 5:07 p.m., and this is our work session for this evening. So, even though we're waiting for one council member, we are going to begin. And I think what I'd like to do is, in as much as our city attorney is here, and would normally be on the second agenda talking about roles and responsibilities of the member of council. Would you like to step up now, Eric, and take some time? I think the council should have a handout that Mr. Johnson has prepared. And I'm sure.
Okay, two matters to address, one in open session and one for executive session being pending litigation. I'll tell you when we get to the pending litigation. The mayor asked me to come and address the division of duties between elected officials. And I prepared a handout that I believe was distributed. I don't know if everyone's had a chance to read it. But let me just review some of the basic concepts within that. They are that the city of Cedar Hills has what is known as the traditional form of city government. You have a six-member council, of which one of the members is the mayor. The mayor has restricted voting powers. He only votes in the case of a tie or in the hiring of the city manager, or in the event that the council is going to amend the mayor's executive and administrative duties. Those are the only times that the mayor needs it. The mayor has the majority of the administrative powers for the city. And those powers are set forth in statute. The statute sets up the default, and the city code has simply adopted the default that is in the state code. That's what most communities have done. And but the mayor does not have 100% of all administrative and executive powers, which is why the courts really struggle when it comes to questions like a referendum and when can an action by the city council be challenged by a referendum, because only legislative actions can qualify to be challenged by a referendum and put on the ballot. If the city council takes an administrative action, such as approving a contract to expend impact fees for a building like this, it has long been my opinion that that is an administrative action. The legislative action was taken when the city council years earlier passed an ordinance to collect impact fees. So the collection of the impact fees would be legislative action, and just approving the contract would be an administrative action. And so that's an example of where the city council retains administrative powers that that some of your actions are administrative. And so that's the basic form of government. The mayor is, by statute, the chief executive officer, and all city employees answer to me. And that's that by statute. It is also in the city code. Let me use myself as an example of kind of what that means. And I will, this was brought to me very quickly, shortly after I was retained by the city of Cedar Hills a number of years ago. At that time, the council consisted of Jim Perry, Rob Fotheringham, Jim Parker, Darren Lauder, and Melissa Wu. And Mike McGee had recently been appointed as the mayor. And that council did not all have the same priorities, and it seemed as if at times they were almost, some were intent on voting against others. And it quickly became a challenge for me because council members would approach me and say, Eric, I need your legal advice on X issue. And then I would get another council member who would want my legal advice on basically that same issue, except they would kind of hint at which way they wanted me to come out, okay? And they wanted me to come out at opposite ends of the spectrum. And so I have to, in a meeting like this, and have to kind of sit down with the council and say, look, I can't be given direction to go in opposite directions at the same time. And so we worked out that I was, the council was not, council members were not, not that they absolutely couldn't, but that they were not to approach me for legal counsel for the city unless there was a vote of three members, a majority of the council, that I was to receive my marching orders from the mayor and that he would direct me on what the research and what council is doing. The city, not necessarily what the end result was, but what the topics and what to do. Because it was just, it was terribly inefficient and it caused gridlock when I was getting different marching orders. And frankly, I don't have the privilege of telling any one of you, no, I'm not going to do that. If any one of you asks me, I will do my best to fulfill that, but it caused a challenge. And so, when we talk about the mayor being the chief executive officer and all the employees reporting to the mayor, a lot of that is mostly to set up a chain of responsibility to get things done in a more efficient manner so that staff is getting a clear signal on which way to pull the wagon. Because if the signals weren't clear, then the wagon kind of zigzags. Staff gets tired. They feel like they're pulling hard, but they're not making a lot of progress because they're not all as fast to pull the same direction. Those are kind of my general comments without going over the details of the memorandum. Are there questions or concerns?
I want to make a statement or two, and then council can ask and discuss and whatever like. Mr. Johnson, I appreciate what you've done. I think that it's always a good idea for all of us as elected officials to be able to hear again what our roles are, what our responsibilities are. And that's something that we should probably hear frequently. So thank you. And I think it was you or someone else that I talk with a lot of mayors, and it seems like someone told me recently that cities that are really large, they have a council that hardly ever gets involved with the running of the city. You've got cities that are really small, where the council does the majority of running the city, and Cedar Hills is somewhere in between, in that we have a council that can be very active, and we've got staff. And so we've got to figure out how to make those things work. But it was also mentioned to me that when council is too involved, staff shuts down because they don't really know what direction they can go because they feel like they're at the will of the council, and if council's so involved, they're confused with what their roles are. So I just urge that the council to always consider the role of staff in terms of their involvement. And also, I'd like to talk a little bit about, an issue that was a little bit controversial in emails over the last week or so in relation to the budget. So I want to explain my interpretation of the budget, and I think in reality that we may be arguing semantics. We're probably looking at something very similar and having a different opinion of something, but really on the same page. So in terms of the budget, then it is up to the mayor and to come up with a budget which he presents to the city council for approval, and they can amend that or they can approve that. And so if the mayor is wise, he's going to get the input from council in terms of what that budget looks like, so that there's not contentious arguments when the council is looking at approving that budget. And then when the council approves that budget, or if they amend it and then approve it, at that point things have been laid in action in terms of what the staff's going to do over the next year. And so it's up to our city manager, the staff, and to a certain extent the mayor, to implement what the council has just done. And then during the year, if there is something that needs to be amended, then a recommendation is made to budget amend, and then the council can approve that or not approve that. And if they approve that, then money can move, it can be moved, say, from one fund to another in order to budget amend, and we continue down that road. So that's my interpretation of the budget, and I feel like it may have unnecessarily created some misunderstanding. For that, I apologize. But this is a discussion, all of this in terms of our roles, that I think is important. So those are my thoughts. Council, go ahead.
Why do Best Buy specifics? So one of the issues that's come up recently was with the closing of the grill for Wheeler. So my interpretation of the roles, as outlined by Dr. Lee said, is that the council did set a budget for the year and say, here's how much, for example, the grill has to work with in this budget, but then it is up to the mayor and staff to decide whether how that budget is met, whether that might be closing for the winter or staying open for the winter, and that is their purview to make that decision, and that the council has very little power there. Is that a correct interpretation of the division of responsibilities with respect to administrative and police legislative?
The hours of the grill or a recreational facility would clearly be considered an administrative matter, primarily to be handled by the mayor and the administrative powers that the mayor has that he exercises through staff. It is possible, if the city council chooses and desires, for the city council to weigh in on that, and the city council could take legislative action, pass an ordinance, and say, by ordinance, we want these hours. And so, most things, even in some detail, the council, if they feel strongly about it, and they have a majority, can take legislative action when they need to take action through that.
And you mentioned in your memo that our mayor does not have veto power.
Correct.
The state statute says that mayor does.
You're thinking of a different form of government. A city such as Salt Lake City has a mayor where all executive powers reside in the mayor. The mayor has veto power. City council is purely a legislative body and only has legislative powers. There isn't any.
So I'm looking at Amendment 3B202, which says mayor and council may form a government.
Okay.
And that's where it says mayor has veto power.
That's right. That's mayor and council. That, It's not what you have. You have a committee form of government. Yeah, that's the type of forum has that. It's mostly your larger communities, and you know, like for example, when I do work with Provo City, they have that form of government. I'll go there, and the mayor sits in as the executive, sits in at the city council meeting. The mayor has his own legal counsel, and the city council has a separate legal counsel. It's set up much more like the federal system with the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. You have the traditional city form of government, which is the, sometimes called the committee form of government. And that's what it grows out of.
So can I ask a question regarding kind of that scenario, which, so I understand the hours are administrative, but say in the budget, we pass a budget that is set for say, for our recreation center to be open year-round. Then that's where I feel like we have a gray line, which is we set a budget for a standard, but then at the same time, then it becomes an administrative issue, and then it changes. And so I think that's where my gray line is that if we're setting a budget, then you know that's the direction that we're agreeing that it's going.
The budget is set up basically departmentally. Okay. There can be variation in line items within the budget that can be handled administratively. And then if there are going to be basically changes in the budget between departments, then that is when you come back to budget to the city.
So kind of going with what Stephanie said then, when the city council voted to construct this building and move forward with the grill, we're setting an expectation of service for our residents. And we're expecting that our staff is going to carry forward that expectation. What I have a problem with, kind of like Stephanie, is that by shutting down the grill, we're now changing the service that we're giving our residents. And so that expectation of ours is not being met during a certain given of time. Now, it may only be 2 or 3, 4 months, but still we have residents that are posting comments and are pretty upset that it's now closed. So now we're not meeting our expectations. And so that's where I'm confused as to if we're changing the level of service, I think that does need to come to the council. If we're changing the hours and going from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. down to 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., then I'm totally fine with that. That's staff. But I don't know about the level of service.
However, we do allocate a budget of a loss or an expected loss or gain. And if we're going to defeat that loss, let's say that we budget a loss of $10,000 for the recreation. And it turns out that by keeping the grill open, we're going to have a loss of $20,000. Then we either need to close the grill to keep within the budget of loss that we allocated, or we need to amend the budget by coming from the council and saying, okay, well, we need to budget a bigger loss, which we did not do. And I apologize for being late. Maybe you answered this already, but the problem of budget amendments seems that in the past we've always spent the money, and then the budget amendment was more of a ratification of action already taken versus permission to alter the budget. Is that normal? Is that the way it's supposed to work?
I would say to some degree it happens that way everywhere. Yet, let me be clear. The council certainly, you know, if the majority of the council, if there's an aspect of what happens in the city and the majority of the council wants to give direction there, they absolutely have the legislative power to say, this is the way we want it to be, and they make it so. And, but let me say this. But it needs to be a majority of the council. Okay, And there should be a formal vote of the council, and then the direction would be given, and to the mayor and staff it would be carried out. As opposed to one or two voicing, I want this, one or two voicing, I want that, and there's not a clear direction. And so, you certainly, whereas normally that would be something left to administration, if it's something that the council wants to step in and take action on, you certainly have the power to do that.
Can I tease this just a little bit? So let's imagine that the city had budgeted, that the council approved the budget for, say, a soccer program for a certain level of ages of people in the city. Could the mayor or the city manager still decide we're not going to run that this year?
Okay, and if I can add some flavor to the example. Let's say, for example, if you're looking at a soccer program, but there just are only 2.5 teams worth of kids who sign up. And so mayor and staff make the decision, there just wasn't enough this year, we really can't run a league with only that many, and therefore we're not going to have a league for 2.5 teams. Yes, they can. And on the other side, the council says, I grew up and we really meant soccer, and if there's not enough, we're going to join those teams ourselves, and we're going to pass an ordinance and say do it.
So it doesn't require passing an ordinance?
That would be the way that the city council would. You could pass a resolution. Like I said, not every action by the council has to be resolved. But certainly when it comes to the expenditure of money, by ordinance.
So, in your example, like for the soccer, we don't get that specific though in our budgeting. We don't say we're going to apply $1,000 for soccer. We give it more for a department or a program. You're saying if the council, a majority of the council wanted to be very specific and say we want this spent specifically on this, then you would want to do that for the ordinance. If they wanted to get that specific.
Yeah, when you're talking about the expenditure of money in the budget, that needs to be by ordinance.
Okay.
That has to be done. There could be other direction the council could give just through resolution.
Okay, and kind of going back to what Scott said, I mean, looking at our numbers, we've been running at a loss since July, and we're just recently kind of finding out about all of this. So if we're overspending a certain budget, I think that information should have been brought to us back a long time before now, before we're in the situation where we're having to close it down and finding out that now those funds have been expended and that they're not there.
You're certainly entitled to request a more detailed level of approval.
So just on that subject, we knew from the grill side that we were struggling to make money. We didn't know exactly where we are, where our profit loss necessarily, until we did the analysis. And it's always a lag of at least a month, at least, sometimes two. So, you know, when the golf shut down and the golf players quit coming, is really when we said, wait a minute, there's a big problem here as far as not getting customers through the door. I mean, we literally were staying open at night and having one family come, you know, selling 10 ice cream cones. And it just, you know, that's when we started saying, look, we're not even selling product. We're not even providing a service. People are not using this. So, you know, we need to really take a look at it. Should we have got the detailed analysis sooner? Yeah, should have. And we can. But we are always going to be a month or two behind of actual costs versus how it hits our books. Part of that is, with food especially, is when you order, you know, you're placing an order, they'll bring it out to you, but they're not billing you for, you know, a couple weeks. And then it has to go through our bookkeeping system, through our payroll. And so, and Greg, you probably have more information on that, but as soon as we realized where we were at on the trend, that's when we said, hey, look, we're just not healthy financially in the Grill. And it's not going to get any better when no one's coming here. We just had no customers coming. And this is, you know, we'll talk about this later on probably, I hope. Our Grill is really dependent on people walking through the door here. And we get people walking through the door when golf season is open. As soon as the golf season closed, it took a nosedive. People just were not coming here. They, you know, and some families did still want to come here. There were a couple who, you know, really liked to come here, and there was one or two that came when the Grill was closed and said, oh, you're closed. But literally only one or two, not dozens. So, you know, the Grill is really dependent on people coming here to the facility and walking through those doors. And so as soon as the golf business was over for the season, and it made no sense to keep golf open either with the course being snowed under. We've tried that before in the past, and it really puts us behind. But if the policy is that the council wants the golf course open 365 or the Grill open 365, it can be done. But we just have to be realistic about what's going to happen.
Right, that's kind of what I'm getting at. Is, I mean, looking at our numbers, in August we lost almost $5,000. And like you said, I mean, if we're a month or two behind, I mean, we should have known that September, October. And at that point, and this is my own total personal opinion, the council should have been notified at that point so that we knew how much we were losing. And, I mean, going forward, I mean, we're always going to learn. We can look back and say hindsight's 2020. So, I mean, we can work on this going forward. But at that point, we could have decided, yes, do we want to continue operating in the loft? Do we need to budget amend? And do we want to budget amend for the rest of the winter so that we can keep it open and keep that service for our residents, even if there are only a few? Or at that point, we say, you know what, we don't have the money to budget amend, and we need to stop the Grill in September, if that's the case. But now we've got to figure out, and staff's got to figure out, okay, where are these funds going to come from? And we didn't get the option to say, you know what, we do want to budget at a loss for its first year because we want to keep it open so that we can continue to market it throughout the year and throughout the winter so that people do have the option to come. They can book events, they can book receptions, or whatever they want, but now we don't have that option to do that. And so that's kind of where I'm a little frustrated.
I think that Eric's saying we do have that option. Council members can force anything on the agenda and make it come to a vote that it's going to be an ordinance required that will be open. And that's, I think, where we need to say if that's something that the council wants to do, then that's the step that we take. I don't think, as a council, that we're even in agreement on whether the Grill is really a service or a business. And so that's part of the confusion, I think, that staff is getting. But we always do have the option to put it on the agenda.
Let me just add this, that in some of these areas that are clearly administrative, it's not uncommon for communities to prepare policies and procedures to present those to the council and get council approval. And I can see in dealing with this facility, one of the challenges with that is that this facility is still new, so there's still a learning process of establishing what those policies and procedures would be. And obviously, in that situation, it would not be uncommon for council to have a little bit more input up front in helping establish those. So that may be what you want to do is ask staff to put together some policies and procedures dealing with this facility and bring them to council, and the council walk through it and make the changes they desire.
Eric, I had another question for you on your memo. You talked about when the mayor gives council assignments to us. And so I kind of want to go over how that works in essence. I know that sounds really generic, but I think for me, I need help on that.
Let me cover what the first what the legal outline is, and then, because there's a whole lot to color in from the legal outline. The legal outline is that the mayor can appoint different council members to have different administrative duties and responsibilities. That appointment is then typically presented to the council. It invites and consent. The council approves the various appointments, and the method to unappoint someone is the same as to appoint them. Okay. And so, a council member that is appointed a certain duty or task by the mayor, once that is approved by the council, they remain there, and the only change is when the council approves the change. The question then is, okay, now that someone is appointed, exactly what are the administrative duties that have been delegated to that council member? On that, I'm going to guess there isn't a lot of clarity. Okay? That's my guess. That in the past, it's been a little vague. You kind of, over this, there may be committee that council member is on. That they then go to those committee meetings, come back, report to the council, and things like that. And so, that may be an area where you want to actually figure out what you want it to be. Because my impression is that this is a council where the priorities are, you're not have a great variation on the programs. I think you're fairly uniform in what is most important. There is a real desire to work together. I have seen and worked with councils, both at this city and other cities, where there is an intense desire to fight with each other. Okay? I don't perceive that. There is a spirit of cooperation. And so you would be wise to perhaps give some flavor, give some coloring to what the administrative duties are that are delegated when someone is delegated responsibility, and what the expectation is. And that then will help future councils that may not have the same cohesiveness that you do, and where it would be much harder to come to an agreement.
So would that coloring in, did that come from the mayor? Or, I don't know, sometimes I think it's such a gray area because sometimes you might have a new mayor that is brand new and doesn't really know that, and maybe they, you know, lean on, you know, senior members. But then at the same time, I don't know.
Yeah,
and so I myself don't sometimes know where I fit in.
Let me say this. The delegation does come from the mayor, okay? And therefore, typically, yes, it is the mayor that different mayors, the same, they may use the same term in a delegation, yet they may ask the person to take on rather different distinct roles. One where they may be much more hands-on, others where more just an oversight than report back. But because the delegation comes from the mayor, it would typically be the mayor's job to.
The other question on that is, you know, I know that the mayor, that he's the one that kind of is like the liaison with staff, but when we are in like a council assignment and we need to work with a staff member, I guess it's odd if like you go through that chain of command and you can't go directly to that staff member because then it's perceived as, like overstepping your bounds, that it needs to go through the mayor. But then I feel like there's just this long chain sometimes, and that it's not always efficient. And
so some of that is seeking clarification. Because when you get right down to it, our form, the committee form of government in which you work is even more pronounced at the county level when you have a three-member commission. And it's even more pronounced there than it is here in those issues come up. And so I think the first place we look to for clarification would be with the mayor and work that out. What do you want me to do? How do you want me to do it? How much here? How much there? And as I say, a subsequent mayor may want it differently. If there are problems after that process, then that is when the council could get involved. Certainly, the council is always able to give their direction as to how they want things to be.
Let me just ask a question to clarify. So, Councilmember Martinez, are you suggesting then that you would prefer that all council assignments be terminated so there is no confusion in terms of interacting with staff?
No, I'm not saying that. I just, sometimes I think it's just really dumb if I need to ask Greg a question, but I have to put the question through the mayor, and then the mayor just forwards it on to him. And so, and it is what it is, but also in regards to, and this is kind of a side thing, is that if I as a council member need information, I feel like I should be able to ask that staff member for information, or sometimes I feel like it stops, and like I can't get it. But then if I send it to the mayor and the mayor forwards it on, then I get it back. And as a council member, it's like, why can't I get the information? So I don't know if what the policy, like.
Well, as a matter of
fact, can I say something? I don't think that there's ever a problem with asking staff questions. I think that confusion has sometimes arisen when council is telling staff what to do and they get confused. And that's what I meant earlier, is that the more involved council gets, sometimes staff shuts down because they don't really understand. So from my perspective, it's not so much asking a question. And I think you remember when you were Mayor Pro Tem, you dealt with this as well, is that the more involved council gets, the more difficult it is for staff to do their jobs. So asking a question, I don't see that as a problem. Telling staff what to do, when that's not really the purview of council member, that's the purview of the city manager and the mayor, I think that's probably overstepping their bounds.
As a matter of courtesy, if you're going to interact with staff in a way that is going to then, you know, if he has a question, staff can just answer off the top, great. But if it's something that they need to invest time in, as a matter of courtesy, you would want to make sure that you're clearing that through the mayor, so you're not interfering with their other duties, or so that it can be prioritized appropriately with the other things that are going on. Again, I think that's a matter of more clarification of chain of responsibility, and that's really what I need. I mean, I need to know, you know, who am I responding to, and when, and why, and if I get confused, I need to know where do I go to get clarification.
And how to proceed. From what I can tell as well, is not every council assignment is the same. And sometimes a council assignment may have more of an administrative role than others. It just depends, but I think that we have to agree on what that is. And when the mayor makes the appointment, that would be part of what the appointment is, you know, you're over this, you know, you are over this aspect of the city, and you'd have this level of administrative oversight. If it turns out that you know, we're all really busy and the finance department needs a lot of help, you know, it could be that the member of the council that's over could be put over the finances and actually directed in a more administrative role, and that's acceptable as long as we all agree to it, and it may even be for a short period of time, whatever. But it's not like it's always going to be, you know, always going to go through the mayor. It's just I think there's a lot of cases that we need to make sure that we understand the roles that we have with the appointments that we have.
You know, I think that's a good point, because there may come a day when I make an assignment where I specifically ask a council member to be involved with administrative items in regards to staff. And so it really comes down to, I think, what council member Jackman and what Mr. Johnson said, that it comes from direction from the mayor in terms of what he wants out of that assignment. And so, like I said, I don't have a problem with people asking questions of staff. I think that in terms of giving them directions, that should probably be talked with probably David first, and then me second. That would be the proper way to do it. But if there's a point in time when there is a council assignment where I specifically say, I need you to be more involved than usual, then we don't need to go over to that too.
Or if we disagree at that level, we want, and we disagree with the level that the mayor's giving an appointment, we can always turn that
absolutely
person down.
Absolutely.
We have that right.
Sure, absolutely. Anything else from the council? I mean, I think this has been a good, healthy discussion because it helps us understand our roles. Dan, would you want to say more?
Yeah, I guess one of the last questions I have is with respect to budgeting. So when the budgeting process occurs and we decide to allocate a certain amount of money, and let's say that's happening at a department level, to what extent does the council have an expectation of the mayor and the staff explaining their goals and visions for what they're going to accomplish with that money, so that we can make decisions as to what amount of money we can give. Right? And so that we...
You know, I think it would be appropriate for the council to set forth what their expectations are.
And if we don't agree with the amount of information, or we don't agree with the direction, then we don't approve the budget. And we continue to discuss it until we come to an agreement and approve the budget.
So, for example, at the meeting we're talking about the grill, when we have the budget coming up for the next budget year, we can expect not just a dollar number, this is what we're going to allocate to run the grill and its various operations, but a written statement of this is our level of service and our expectation that people are going to provide even that level of money.
We could, although I would argue that that's where the policy and procedures come into place, is part of the budget is, I'll approve it if we put this into the, subject of putting this into the policies and procedures so that later on it's documented.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can tie certain notes to the budget saying, I'll approve this, but only, I think you have to have a more formal.
If you get three votes, you can't put those notes in the budget.
Conceivably, the policies and procedures could be agreed upon to afford it.
Absolutely.
Right? So they say, here's our policy and procedures for running the grill, here's our budget for the grill, and it's all in one.
And we've done that in other areas, for public works with snow removal and stuff. We have said we want snow removal to happen when X amount of snow is on the street, and that's what we're budgeting for. If we wanted to do it more often, then we would get more money. If we wanted to do it less often, we would do less money. So we kind of have been doing parts of that in the budgeting process.
Which is a good example, because it's that snow removal is about as unpredictable as the grill.
Yeah.
How much are we going to spend? I have no idea. This year it's a lot. Last year it was nothing. But I think in cases where it's variable, I think that kind of direction is probably very appropriate. To that way, I think there's less confusion. I think certainly in the case of the grill, I think there was a lot of confusion. I don't think that we all had the same vision of mind of the amount of subsidy and the desire to keep it open or not. So that causes the confusion.
Then at what point is staff supposed to come back to the council and ask for a budget amendment if we are going over a budget and we know that we don't have funds in that account? At what point is that supposed to be made known so that we can amend or rectify or change or whatever we need to do differently? When is that supposed to occur?
That's probably a question for David.
And I would say as soon as we can, as soon as it's feasible, and as soon as we have data to bring to you that can show that. Like again, in the case of the grill, our former finance director left in August. We brought a new one on at the end of that. He had very little time with her to train. There was a gap. There was a drop right there. Definitely, you know, there's been a lot of change in the last year, and finances have been one of them. We launched immediately into an audit, and we had other financial issues going on, other things to look at too. So I would say as soon as we understand that there is an issue, we need to come back to the council and let you know and say, look, you know, we're $2,000 behind this month in this account, and here's the level of service that we're trying to provide, but it's costing more than it is anticipated. We should let you know as soon as we can. So,
see, I guess that's where I'm frustrated, is that that's exactly what I thought should have happened.
Sure.
And instead of that happening, all of a sudden, we find out 2 days before the grill's closing that all of a sudden that service is going away. And that's where I have heartburn about it, is that we didn't get that option. For what it's worth.
So maybe what we need to do is come up with some kind of a policy to prevent that from happening again. And I think part of it is there are a lot of circumstances, and we can, like I said, we can look in the past and argue and complain all we want. But I mean, moving forward, I think that things have stabilized, and I think that David's committed to bringing that to our attention more timely than perhaps has been during the, you know, during these this time period of time when we're trying to ramp up a lot of people and get over a lot of change. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah.
So I think that looking forward, we can expect to have more timely information. It's unfortunate what happened in the past, but if it continues, then we need to continue to discuss it for sure.
And with that, I think it would be prudent to get that policy. You know, what does the council want? What's the direction there? If the direction is, hey, we really want that to be open year-round, you know, that should be voiced. That should be, you know, said, hey, continue to tell us how much we're losing, but we still want it open. That's the direction we would like. And so we're open to that, definitely. So,
that, you know, I think with three votes, we can open it.
Yes,
the
exactly.
Next time we meet.
I think that I'd like some clarifications. On one hand, I'm hearing that there's concern over the grill losing money. On the other hand, I'm hearing, you know, a desire to keep it open. So there seems to be some sort of a contradiction there in terms of, you know,
I don't think
it's not going to be agreement on that.
It's not going to be a unanimous vote. If we had that discussion in a meeting, it would be a long discussion.
Yes.
It would. I can't predict the outcome.
But I guess, I know I'm hearing that from the same council members, that concern about the budget, yet wanting to keep it open. So I just want clarification in terms of which one you want.
I think that's a good question. And I'm not saying that I would have voted to keep it open, but we need to know how much are we going in the hole by keeping it open. Because up until this point, we didn't have the option.
I think that's a legitimate point in terms of more information, and that's why the spreadsheets that you just received and that I just received, then you'll be receiving those on a monthly basis in order to keep up to date on those things. I do think it was entirely appropriate that, you know, with what Mr. Bunker and I did in terms of using, you know, directing close down the grill. Now the discussion can be had if three council members want to open it back up, that's your right. And more power to you. From our perspective, where we were, where I was told that they were having to throw away food and didn't have staff to defend the grill, that's an administration decision. Right now, it's absolutely correct that it's the council decision that they want to keep it open. That's your right. And if you have three votes, then you have the right to do that.
We can look it over.
You don't need three votes to get an item on the agenda to have a conversation with the two council members. And so I think that's where my frustration came from, is that I wanted to have a conversation, and I felt that there were other people that wanted to have a conversation on the council, but we were never given the opportunity to have that conversation.
I don't recall ever being asked to put something on the agenda that was not put there.
So I replied back to one of Jenny's emails, and I said, all I've been asking for is a conversation.
And I agree with Stephanie on that email, so I know at least the two of us asked.
That's not a formal request.
It has to be a formal request.
And that's my bad then. I mean, I guess in the past, every mayor is different, obviously, but any time in the past when I had talked to Mayor Richardson about something, it wasn't an issue. And so I'll totally take full responsibility that I didn't make a formal request.
Well,
I know better.
Well, and I didn't understand that by that you were actually asking for something to be on the council. A conversation can be a conversation between you and I in terms of what your thoughts were, what you and I have done. And so this is a good learning process in terms of knowing what you guys, you know, want and meeting those things. I do think that Mr. Butler and I acted appropriately, but it's up to the council in terms of if you guys want to open it back up again. Any further thoughts or comments?
Are you ready to turn to pending litigation?
No.
Yes.
Okay. We can bring this up at any council meeting, and so feel free to do that. We do have other stuff on the work session agenda, and if I don't want to cut off the conversation.
No, I was just going to say, can I actually make a formal request now that we have this on our work session for next meeting also, so that we can discuss it again?
2 weeks from tonight?
Yeah, I'd like to continue forward. I think it's a good thing to continue.
And so, do you want to say what the purpose of that conversation is, just so that we can prepare?
I'm confused. Do you want to discuss the council mayor rules, or do you want to discuss the grill?
I want to discuss the grill and our policies and procedures for the grill.
We can do that
today.
So
you're going to be making a proposal?
That's
in terms of, like, legislation or a law, or do you want to talk more about what we've just spent the hour talking about?
More just kind of what we've been talking about and seeing if we can define a little bit more of what we would like to ask staff to do to create policies and procedures for the grill.
Okay.
That's on the agenda right now for tonight. But we could do the sooner on pending litigation, correct? It's noted. It says discussion of future recreation park and grill.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to do it tonight, that's fine.
It's already on the agenda.
Yeah.
But if you want to have it again next 2 weeks from tonight.
Sometimes it's good to just think about it over a period of time and come back when we've all had a chance to think about it.
Okay.
I think we can discuss it tonight, but I definitely wouldn't mind seeing it next time also.
Okay. We do have, talked about the rules and responsibilities of mayor and council, also talking about the direction of the recreation department and grill. We've kind of done that.
Yeah.
You guys want to talk more about that?
I'm assuming that's why Greg and Wade are here.
Yes.
So I'd like to hear from them as well. But if we can do pending litigation first, if Eric needs to go, I don't have a preference which order it's in.
I would like to take a 5-minute break. And so if you guys don't mind, let's take a 5-minute break. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Thank you.
He'll be back shortly, hopefully. And so do I have a motion to go into executive session?
I move to go into executive session for certain Utah State Code 524, 204, 524, 205 to discuss pending litigation.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Motion passes. We're going to executive session.
Hit the gavel again, Stephanie.
He's looking for a missing child right now, but he's hoping to be back soon. Okay, so we're going to go back into work session at 6:31 p.m. And we can move on to the next agenda item, which is a discussion on the direction of the recreation department and the grill. David, are you leading the conversation?
Activities in general also. And maybe we start out with the grill. One of the things that we noticed on the spreadsheet that we sent to the council was that a lot of the activity in the grill was definitely driven by golf. That as golf declined in play, and then when we ended up closing the course, that revenues, any activity at the grill also dipped. In other words, we are really tied to, we're tied to golf. The grill is really tied to golf.
Well,
I assume that's, that we're really tied to foot traffic. And right now, our primary foot traffic is golf. In the future, we have lots of foot traffic for recreation.
That's right. This year, we were tied to golf.
That can change. We were limited, obviously, with advertising and different things this year going into it. But if we look at recreation, you know, what I would like to see is that recreation gets more and more and more up here. That we finish the basement, that, you know, we get better programs up here. And we can talk about kind of the recreation in general with our fitness classes. They're struggling. They're struggling getting consistency. And when we're saying, hey, you guys are shut down today because of this event that takes away your space, that hurts. That hurts recreation. So we need the spot, the space for recreation to be dedicated so that they know that it's going to happen.
I have a few questions on that. So I'm assuming with having more foot traffic with recreation, in my mind anyway, we would have to make some significant changes to our menu because most people aren't going to come and do the Zumba class and then eat a burger and fries after. They're going to want something, you know, smoothies, protein shakes, whatever the case is. So I'm assuming we would have to probably make some adjustments there. And I'm also curious to know, I know this summer we had to shut down a lot of recreation classes because of events. Have we done that in any other month?
There were a few where we shut a recreation class down. Not as many as in December by far was a big issue.
Do we know approximately how many in December that we had to cancel outside of December because of events or tournaments?
I'd say 5 to 7.
Okay.
Right in there.
Okay.
But each one caused a domino effect.
Right.
But it was just the evening classes, not the day classes, correct?
The day classes too
were canceled.
Here's what happens when we have an event. They want to come in at 9 o'clock in the morning and start setting up their room and start setting up their stuff and putting in their, you know, fancy stuff for their reception. It ties this room up all day long.
Then we undercharge.
They know they pay for that.
Oh, so they pay an independent fee?
Okay.
Okay.
There had to be more than 5 to 7 rec classes in the whole month of December. No, I said outside of December.
That was before December.
I said outside of December.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
In December, it happened more than that. Oh, yeah. Probably 20.
Probably.
You know, that kind of
complex. So, I know this is pretty early, but do we have... So, I want to make sure that we don't base next year's decisions on this year's performance. I think it's going to be a really bad mistake unless the conditions are going to be similar. So if we anticipate that the basement would be done prior to like July or September or whatever, then that's going to affect in a positive way next year's finances because a lot of these problems that we're talking about disappear because we won't have to cancel things. We'll have different kinds of conflicts. Are we anticipating that?
Yes. We are. So council approved getting the plans drawn up. We have not approved a contractor or an estimate to construct the base.
Correct.
Still will come before that. And so we anticipate that within the next month and a half to come before the committee. And then the council can decide if you want to proceed forward with that.
When you say a month and a half, is that with the bid? A month and a half? Yes. Okay. At the lock.
Is where we're shooting.
Okay.
Ish. So if we can get recreation out of the main floor, especially when we're busy up here, that frees up this for rentals. There's a good return on the investment. we can use this space that way and get recreation dedicated for the basement. But then we still need to talk general guidelines for the grill. And you know, the policies and procedures is a great, I think would be a great tool to make sure that we can use that to run the grill. The issue is we need to talk real nuts and bolts about the grill itself. That grill, initially, I mean, I don't know if you guys remember what the grill was before. It was a hot dog grill, literally. And we tried to cook hamburgers. They were Costco hamburgers. It was very, very basic. When we built this building, the grill gained some traction, some momentum, had a different vision. And luckily, at the very end, we were able to put in a walk-in fridge. Because without the ability to keep food, you're still limited to a hot dog grill. And in ways, we still are. That is not a full kitchen. And so it's, you know, and I haven't had a lot of experience in the food industry, but Greg and Wade have. And we're limited on what we can actually get out of that grill as far as product. So going back, do we do shakes and you know, yogurts and all different kinds of product, maybe more fit, you know, fitness type product. We can definitely do that. We just have to understand the limitations of the grill and storage space and cooking space and, you know, costs for getting that equipment. We just have to understand that up front because the grill still has limitations. And so there's a couple of different thoughts here. One, expand the menu, make it more so that it covers more people. And that is definitely one of the thought processes. But who are we really going to get at the grill? Who are we getting up here? How many recreation classes do we need to make that equivalent to a golf tournament? That's a lot of recreation.
But that assumes that you're still relying solely on foot traffic,
okay.
Right? There are other ways to get people here that we can explore more than we have in the past. It just takes time for people to know what we have and come up here. I mean, so... We could say that, you know, initially we'll budget based on foot traffic because that's a known. But I hope that over time we're getting better at alternate methods of getting people in here so that we're not relying solely on the foot traffic.
And what I don't want to paint is a picture way too rosy that, hey, yeah, we're just going to knock it out of the park and everybody's going to start coming here. Because here's the reality. An event like a wedding, at the destination, you're going to have to go somewhere to hold, you know, your daughter's wedding. You just are. At golf, it's a destination. I have to go somewhere to play golf. Food is not. I'm driving down State Street, and I'm like, oh, that looks good, and I turn in there, right? It's not really, you know, right now, when I go out to eat, I start heading towards a place that has four or five places to eat a lot of times. And you just, there's synergy with that. And I actually anticipate, I hope, our commercial zone be in that same way. People will just start heading to our commercial zone because they know what they need is there. It'll be very difficult for us to have that with this grill where people just head here thinking they're going to get everything they want. So we're in kind of a different situation with the grill here, and it feels like it's always going to be more supportive to recreation and to golf than it is going to be that destination place. Even with that extra advertising.
Sure, we have to balance that.
And in my view, from spending time up here when we do community events here, we have a lot of residents that come. We had a lot of residents come for the Santa Claus, and we had a lot of residents come for the open house. And so I think that's something that we need to take into consideration when we're talking about marketing is if it is foot traffic, then we need to do more here. That's not just recreation, because there are some people who don't want to do that, but they do want to be Santa Claus, or they do want to, you know, whatever the case is.
And we definitely need to take advantage of that.
And we need to be flexible. We need to be flexible and make sure that we can adjust our menu according to the activity, because different destinations have different appetites, right?
That becomes a little more difficult to adjust menus.
Sure.
Not saying that it can't be done.
Sure. It's something to consider.
Yeah.
So I think there's two things that I'd like to discuss. Maybe not today. Maybe we can put that as part of what we'll do in the future. The first one is I think that we need to at least agree as a majority what our subsidy policy is for recreation in general and for the grill specifically, so that these decisions are easier to make, right? We made a decision somewhat in a vacuum because we don't have any policies on how much subsidy. And so we made a very business-like decision to shut down the grill in order to save money because we didn't have a clear vision on, you know, weeks on expectations on subsidy. So I think we need to understand that better. The second one is, you talk about how the grill is not really designed for what it is. I would be interested, at least in a ballpark, to know what you would change and what it would cost and what you would expect to get from it. Because I hate to say, sorry, you can't have what you want, but go make us a lot of money anyway. It doesn't. There are specific things that we can do, that you can do, to make the grill better. I'd like to know what those are, and I'd be interested in what the costs are and what the benefits are, because maybe we need to do something like that. Maybe we need to spend some money and enhance the grill so that it can provide better for what we have.
So a question along those lines. So you stated that there are some inherent limitations to grill right now. Can you be more specific about what those are?
You know, I'll have Greg talk to that. I mean, in order to save labor costs, Greg ordered the grill a lot, you know, because we would get that pop of people. We only had one or two people working the grill. Greg had to come in. Greg physically was in the grill.
Yeah.
And knows what it is that slows them down. So, what don't you?
Just limitations you're talking?
Yeah.
Space is the biggest issue. What you see is what you get. I mean, we've talked about that for a long time. The grill, everything are right there on the line. That's what we have. We don't have a char broiler, we don't have ovens, you know, so we can't get into the bigger stuff to go to a wider menu. So that's probably our number one issue is space, not having a lot of room. What we have is that one grill. And you can only cook so many burgers and make so much money based off just one little grill. The other issue as well, I mean, sometimes we hear this, let's add some shade, let's add some smoothies and things like that. But they're great. There's a lot of money behind there, $6,000 per machine to add those. You need to run additional electrical for all those. And on top of that, the biggest issue with those is labor, because there's labor that's being made. Because you're taking that person away from that to make a smoothie or a shake, you're then taking away the customer service piece that that one person is. They're running off to take care of that issue. So, again, like David said, we will do whatever for tasks to do, but there's a cost. And everything, we have to realize that too. From the beginning of time, I mean, I've always said that this is probably not set up to be the most successful thing in the world, and it's proven through the numbers. We just need to find out, from your perspective, what's the idea in it.
So
what do you want to see?
So I heard space, char broiler, electrical if we needed other equipment. Mm-hmm. Are there other things that we're lacking?
Equipment. I would say a big issue, too, is signage. We have no signage. There's nobody knows. I mean, I think we've all said this before too. 50% of our, probably more than that, already, are in those buildings still here, which is flabbergasting. You know, but at the same time, it's an issue. Right?
We haven't done.
How do we get to know? How do they get to know?
I mean, solving these kinds of limitations and whether we really want to solve them absolutely comes down to what our vision really is.
Sure, sure.
And is it really just for foot traffic and serving convenience foods? And that takes us in a certain direction. If it really is to be a full-service restaurant and pulling in traffic from around the area, people say, yeah, I do want to go there. I mean, there are certain restaurants that are destination places. Blue Lemon is one of them, for example, right? I specifically would go there because of the atmosphere and the quality of the food. So if we had the vision that we wanted to grow to be that, then it would actually draw people to see that they want to come here.
Sure.
That takes a significant investment both over time, limitations, advertising, signing. At that point, I start to wonder, do we as a city even accomplish that, or do we instead renovate and lease out the space and let somebody else come in here and do that as a business? For me, that starts to cross over into the line of, I'd rather have a private business come in and accomplish that vision, whereas a vision to serve our residents, our foot traffic, our
our golf and recreation events, then I would be more inclined to say, let's keep that small and let's serve the way that we can and stay under a small budget. And I wouldn't worry about advertising to the community.
So, I mean, that is definitely something I think should be on the table for discussion is, what if we leased out the space to another company? I know Greg talked to the owner of Chubby's, and it doesn't have to be them, but it could be someone similar or someone not even. Who? What if it was Neaters or somebody else? Someone who has already that advertising capability, already has clientele, customers that they can say, hey, we're busy here, but you can go to our Cedar Hills location. And, you know, I don't know. With that, though, there is a loss. Sometimes there's a loss of control. So you wouldn't be able to dictate and say, hey, you know, we don't want your menu to be X. We need it to be something else. And they may say no.
But in return, you get the cost certainty of we're going to give these space every month and we're going to get some money out of it.
They take on life save labor. Right. They take on everything.
Food
right.
Costs. Those are our two biggest issues.
You know, and if that number were, you know, even if we leased it for $500 a month, yeah, that's a guaranteed $6,000 a year just in letting them take all the risk. You know, I don't know. That's
making better service for our residents in terms of being able to keep it open during the winter. I mean, if they're able to really try and track it.
I think that's
said, wow, I can't believe there's a Chevy there. I'd love to go there.
And you know, that's just a discussion that we should have. That should be on the table, I think. And it may not be something that you guys want. You may want the control and the ability to change the menu. It may limit us if we were to lease it out. You know, if we wanted to have an activity on a Saturday morning where we needed to grill and it was a community event here, we needed to grill, we have to make sure that would be amenable to the company we leased it to.
We could probably work that out on a contract.
Or a contract, you know. There's just details. Honestly, I'm not opposed to looking at that either, at leasing it out.
Yeah, I don't think that I am either. There's a lot of fluid things right now regarding this, and so I suggest we put this on our agenda to talk about it again in 2 weeks, and because there are discussions that are taking place.
But it would be, I agree, but it would be helpful if there were specific aspects that we want to talk about in a couple weeks. Maybe we want to focus on identity and whether or not we want to lease it or something so that we can have something to think about and do some research and whatnot.
Yeah, I think that's a conversation.
What the city council wants for it.
Yeah,
I think that's what we've got to answer first.
And that's what I'm hoping we do in a work session atmosphere where we can just really throw things out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can definitely have it on the agenda, but I really think we need to really tie this down in a work session format and get it all out.
Well, at least up front. Because I remember years ago we used to have the golf course discussion on the agenda every week, and the discussion was always open, and frankly, nothing ever got decided from it because there was never a focus. It was just, we're going to have it on the agenda, and we talk about it, and it was just a waste of time. But it was a lot of time, and those are the times when the meetings went till 1 in the morning and things like that. And I don't want to get into that. I'd like to drive on specific topics and make some decisions, whether they be policy decisions, vision decisions, or specific actions.
I would think, really, the first thing that we have to look at is, as a council, do we decide that this is a service that we're willing to subsidize, or is it a business that we want to make a profit? Because that's going to determine then the change decision. So is that the topic that we discuss at our next work session?
Or vision and identity?
I think vision and identity is probably very important. Also, to decide what you want to be. That's what you're going to market in anyway.
And that's going to drive, I think, the topics, or at least it's going to shape the topics. We start talking about leasing. If we know what we want to be, we're going to have very specific discussion about leasing, whereas if we have a different identity, we're going to have a different discussion on what we all lease. So maybe we ought to do that next time.
I talked a lot off of Wade, only because he knows this. He comes from Fox Hollow. He's dealt with this over there. They went from losing money to changing, reducing their menu. I know Chili's. You know, that's what my cousin told me the other day. I know Chili's. What I know, in my experience from restaurants, it's not set up for success. You know, whatever limitation it is, it's just my honest feeling. I've said that from day one. luckily, like they've mentioned, we were able to get a walk-in cooler. That was huge. Had we not had that, we would be dead. Yeah, we would.
So what you're saying is, we've got a bunch of land down south that you can build from Chili's, is that what you're saying?
I love it. You know, but the thing is, though, a lot of those places, what I've always done, it's been spoon-fed. We have advertisers. They take care of it all for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's gone through this process, so I bounce a lot of those ideas off him, because I want to see it succeed.
Absolutely.
But I'm also honest, you know, and I also say...
Which I hope that we all are.
Absolutely. So for us, like we talked, like Wade just mentioned, it's about the identity. What do you want to be? We can do the best we can to make it happen.
So on that note, on the identity, I think that, and it's kind of like a trifecta here at this building, because it has three uses in essence. And mostly if the basement comes on, that brings in that recreation. And I think for going forward, what we want to take place in the basement can also, I mean, if we're going to just stay status quo where we're at on our recreation program for the basement, per se, I think that we already know what takes place. But if we have a more aggressive plan for what's going to take place in the basement, classes, more recreation programs, whatever it is, I think that also factors into our vision of the grill. And for me, I really hope that the basement brings in our family more, you know, for classes, for programs, hopefully for reading books, whatever it is. And I think for that, we also have to look at, for me, my kids hang out at Walmart and buy crap, you know? And so it's like, well, put the crap up here. You know, I mean, if you look at other recreation centers of maybe like their little concession stand or whatever they have, I don't think our menu is as friendly to our youth to come and spend $2 or $3. I mean, they can come and get fries,
sure.
But
that's one of
they
our
want other chips or candy or,
sure.
You know, I guess for me, I just think that maybe we need a more youth-friendly menu, but at the same time, we maybe need a more fitness-friendly menu. And it really is like a mosh-posh type of menu. So for me, I think that vision of what our center is would maybe shape that too.
Well, I think we're going to talk about this much more in our next meeting. We are limited in time tonight. And so I suggest take a 5-minute break now in order to get ready for City Council meeting in 5 minutes. Okay.